us continue with my favorite dividend discount model, and we call this the discounted cash flow model. This model uses the present value of expected dividends and the present value of the expected future price to value a share of stock. Are you still a little shocked, that is, or shall we say, shell-shocked from our previous presentation? Well, go back and do those worksheets again and again and again, because you're in for a treat, dear students. This model is much more powerful than the previous model. We take the present value of the future dividends and the present value of the price of the stock when we plan to sell. You see, in the previous model, we just looked at dividends. But in this model, we're going to combine the dividends with the fact that the company is not going to go out of business. At least we hope it doesn't go out of the business. And we use the present value multipliers from the table. If you really want to do the exponential calculations, be my guest, but I'm not going to do them. And sadly, it is not specifically covered in the text, which I think is ridiculous, but they didn't do it, so we're going to do it. It's really just the pure form of the dividend discount model, with the present value of the expected price of the stock as our final cash flow. And I apologize, dear students. I know much of what we're saying just, what is he saying? Don't worry. Just do the calculations, okay? Just do the calculations, and then the concepts will creep. I promise. And as with the other dividend discount models, this model is very sensitive to our estimates and our choice of required or expected rate of return, and hence can, no, should, will be, we should say, very far off the mark. So let's take a look at it. Here's an example. We assume that it's January 1st, just to make it easy. One year, okay, on the year 2020. Pretzels Unlimited, symbol is PU, is currently selling for $22 per share and will pay us $2 per share in dividends in 2020. We believe that they're going to increase their dividends to $2.20 in 2021, $2.30 in 2022, and $2.30 in 2023. Oops, there's a typo there. I got to fix that. It'll be fixed by the time you see this. We will be selling the stock at the end of 2023, and we expect the price to be $27 per share at that time. So our required rate of return, 12%. I'd rather do 10, but let's do 12%. So you see what's happening here? As we saw in the previous stocks, this stock is increasing their dividends. And now what we're doing is we're saying, well, it's selling for $22 now. In 4 years, at the end of 2023, we expect it to be $27 a share. Right, well, we don't know what it's going to be, but that's what we expect it to be. And our required rate of return is 12%. So now, the present value of the future dividends and the present value of the price of the stock when we plan to sell is what we need to calculate. We add the two together, and that gives us what we believe the stock is worth today. So how do we do this? Now, you can do it now or wait, but I want you to do it, because it's really not that hard. We take $2, the price, the dividend for year number one, that's 2020, and we multiply that times the present value multiplier for 1 year at 12%. Where did we get that? Well, remember the link that you saw in the previous presentation? I'm going to call it up. I have it on my hard drive. You call it up on the internet, but it's that present value table here that we see. So it's in Canvas, and it's on the website. So find it and go across to 12% and down 1 year, and there's the present value multiplier for year number one. And this thing does all kinds of strange things with it, which it wouldn't do, but it does. So you go down 1 year, go across 12%, and that's the present value multiplier. So remember that, 0.893. Okay? So we multiply $2 times 0.893, and that's $1.78.6, like $1.79. So that $2 that we're going to get this year in dividends today is worth to us $1.79. And then the $2.20 we're going to get next year, well, we take that and we multiply it times the present value multiplier for year number two. Well, what is that? Go back to this to the table. And for year number two, that's 0.797. Right? That's what it should be. Let's see. Yep, 0.797. There it is. So $2.20 a year from now in 2021 times 0.797 is worth $1.75. So that $2.20 we're going to get in 2021 is worth to us $1.75. And then in year number three, are you getting this? Okay, let's go back. It's $2.30. We expect them to increase it to. So let's go back to the table. And the multiplier for year number three is 0.712. All right? Year number four, 0.636. So let's get both of them there so we remember both of them. So for the year number three, 712. Year number four, 636. So we're going to get dividends in 2022. I'm sorry, I got to change that. And then $2.30 in 2023. So the multiplier for year number three is 0.712. $2.30 times 0.712 is $1.64 about. And $2.30 times the multiplier for year number four, 0.636, is $1.46. So that's the present value of the dividend, the four dividends over the next 4 years. Right? Now, remember that we believe the stock is going to be worth $27. So we can think of that as a cash flow. We can think of it because we can go to the market and say, hey, we've got 100 shares or 50 shares or 10 shares of Pretzels Unlimited, and we believe it's going to be worth $27. Are we going to be right? Probably not. No, most likely not. But let's say it's worth $27. Well, we use that same present value multiplier for that same year. Let's go back to the table just to be sure. In year number four, 12%. That's, oh, come on, how are you doing it? There it is, 0.636. So we have the 0.636 tooth at times. Sometimes people will go to year number five. No, don't do that. It's the same year as we got this, as we received the dividend in the last year. So don't go to the next year. We'll try to keep you from doing that. So that's $27 times 0.636. So that's worth to us $17.17 today. I know it sounds bizarre, but that's how we work it. We use the term, the verb, discount. We discount that $27 back to the present, and that's worth to us today $17. Because if we're going to get 12%, $17.17 at 12% in 4 years will turn into $27. So if we get $27 in 4 years, and we believe we want 12%, which is what we're using in this case, that's worth to us today $17. So what would you rather have, $17.17 today or $27 in 4 years from now? Well, if you have a required rate of return of 12%, they are equivalent. So we add up all the dividends and we add the present value of the stock that when we plan to sell, and we wind up with $23.81 about, $23.81. So we today can buy that stock for $22, and we believe it's worth $23.81. So we'd say to ourselves, you know what? This is not a bad buy. We believe it's worth $23.81, and the stock is selling for $22. Now, if the stock were selling for $32, we'd say, well, you know, we don't really think it's worth that amount. So what can we do? We can go to another stock, or we can lower our required rate of return and just say, you know what? Maybe we're happy with 9%. See what happens when we run the numbers again with 9%. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, doing it this way is a little tricky. Let's turn it into a spreadsheet, slide 37. And I think this makes it a little easier to comprehend, right? We've got the year number 2020, year 2021, 222, 2023. And then notice 2023 twice. So we're going to make that, we're going to make it a little easier in just a moment. But see, $2 times the present value multiplier for year number one, $2.20 times the present value for multiplier for year number two, $2.30 times the present value for year number three, $2.30 times year number four, and don't use year number five. It's the same year. And that's why I'd like you not to do it this way, but to do the calculation using this format on slide 38. You see how we combined the two into one calculation? In the year 2023, $2.30 plus $27, $29.30 times the present value multiplier for year number four. And you get the exact same amount because you're just adding the two and then multiplying. And adding the dividend and the stock price in the last year saves us a couple of manual calculations. But, dear students, more importantly, it allows us to use a special spreadsheet function to calculate the internal rate of return. Now, maybe you've heard of this, maybe you haven't, but it's a very important and powerful concept. And you will learn about it in an upper level or graduate finance or investment class. The internal rate of return is a measure of what the rate of return we can expect from a series of cash flows. But here we have to include positive and negative cash flows. We don't even look at the positive cash flows. And someday when you take an upper level or a graduate finance or investment class, you will learn how to manually compute internal rate of return. And hopefully you will not have a sadistic professor who will require you to calculate it manually more than once. Because it's not that hard, but it's just very tedious and time-consuming and involves making certain guesses and then trying again. That's why we have computers. We have to let the computer do all that work. We don't want to do that work. We're simply going to enter the numbers into a spreadsheet formula and then press the enter key and we're done. In other words, we required a 12% rate of return from Pretzels Unlimited. But what do the numbers that we presented, what do they tell us will be our expected rate of return, right? How do we calculate that? Well, we go to a spreadsheet. Now, you can use Microsoft Excel, or I use Google Docs. It's on the website. And this example right here is on the website, and you can download as a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, or you can make a copy in Google Docs and use it. But it's very easy to use and powerful, because here we go. We use the formula equals IRR, which stands for, I pressed it wrong. IRR equals IRR, internal rate of return, and then we use the values, the block. And if you haven't used the spreadsheet, it's not that hard to do. It's like a big calculator, so play with it or find somebody who's done it. And then we use what we believe the rate of return is. Now, you can just leave that zero, and the computer will try to guess, but it's our best guess. So the values and then the approximate, our best guess is what it should be. Now, notice, though, the difference is we have to add the negative cash flow. We have to add the fact that we paid $22 for this investment before we started receiving the. We just didn't start receiving $2 and $2.20 and $2.30 without buying the stock. So that's the year zero, so to speak. We paid $22, our initial outlay. So you enter any outflows as negative numbers. And then you enter the cash inflows as positive numbers. Possible numbers. Positive. That's another typo I got to fix. Enter as positive, not possible numbers. Well, they are. They're also very possible because we don't know if it's going to happen or not. But $2 for $2.20 for 2020, $2.20 for 2021, $2.30 for 2022, and then 2023, we're going to get $2.30 in dividends plus the $27 that we expect the stock to be worth that we can sell. And then in this cell right here, it's the formula equals IRR for the formula, open parentheses, and now we're assuming that this is B, there's A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, that's how it works, like a big bingo game, big jigsaw puzzle, and B2, and then the colon means down to B3, so this block of cells, these cash outflow, and then these inflows, and then we put 0.12. You can, as I said, we can leave it zero, and then the spreadsheet will figure it out. Will do its best to figure it out. Sometimes it comes back with "I can't do it. There's no possible a result." But so we put 12% in, and the spreadsheet said, "Ooh! If this is exactly what you do, if you pay $22 for this stock, and then you receive these cash flows, and the stock is worth $27 at the end of those 4 years, you're actually getting a 14.51% rate of return." Okay? So now, what we do in the face-to-face class is we run now to the spreadsheet online and we actually play with it. And it's very cool because you can start changing the numbers. That's the cool thing about a spreadsheet, and let the computer do all the calculations. And you can say, well, what if we paid, you know, $27 for the stock? Is it really worth it? Or what if it went down to 20? And then you put in the 20. And then we say, well, maybe the dividends aren't going to be as high, and maybe the stock price isn't going to be high. So you can start playing with it and seeing what kind of results you get. And that's it's very cool. So do play with this. And it makes doing your assignment a whole lot easier, because I'm going to ask you to do these from now until the end of the semester, dear students. And I know that might sound crazy, and you may be right, I might be crazy, but this is, in my humble opinion, the most powerful tool for pointing us in the direction of companies that are going to make us wealthy over time. All right, there are others, don't get me wrong, but this one is my favorite, and so we're going to do this until you see it in your dreams. So you might as well learn it now. You have a lot of students, several students who, you know, the first exam number two, they really don't learn how to do it, and then I say it's going to be on exam number three and four and then final exam, and then exam number three, they really still haven't been able to learn how to do it, and then by exam number four, they go, okay, I'll learn how to do it. Come see me, contact me. That's why I'm here. I can talk about this far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. And that's why I'm teaching this. So do it, and be awesome. Okay, so now let's continue. Okay, excuse me. I get a little excited. Pardon me. Here's another example. Oh, now we would do, we would then do the next sample problem in worksheet number one, the sample problem in worksheet number two. So now we're going to go on. Here is a second example of the discounted cash flow model. Genes are us. Genes are us. You know, did you hear what the one chromosome said to the other chromosome? Do these genes make me look fat? See what you're missing in online? These are the jokes I throw out at the students in the face-to-face class. Genes are us is currently selling for $21 a share. They pay no dividends. In fact, they're losing tons of money. This is one of those biotech startups that may become the next Genentech, Amgen, who knows? Or it might fall into a pool of tears and disappear from the face of the earth. We believe that in 5 years, it's going to sell for $50. It's selling for $21 now. Our required rate of return is 13%. Well, how can we determine if this is a good investment? There's no dividends, folks. They're not going to pay dividends. They're using every cash they can get from selling their stock and from borrowing and stealing to make this wonder drug that will cure hoarseness and make them filthy rich. So they're not paying dividends. So which dividend model can we use? The discounted cash flow model can still be used. Remember that the value of the stock in the discounted cash flow model is the present value of future dividends plus the present value of the price of the stock when you plan to sell. Well, if you have no dividends, then it's worth zero. But But if we believe the stock is going to be worth $50 in 5 years, we can go across to 13% down to 5 years. So let's go get the table and move across to the 13% down 5 years. Okay, so let's move. There's down 5 years. That's fine. You can't fit it all in one, but this is 5 years. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then go across to 13%. And there it is. That's the present value multiplier, 0.543. So remember that. And we go and we multiply the $50 price of the stock, which we, of course, we can sell at the time as a cash flow, 0.543. And that says that the stock we believe today should be worth $27. It's selling for $21. So we believe, hey, you know, this is something of value to us. We can buy what we believe is worth $27 for $21. Now, hopefully by this time, you will now understand that a stock like this is highly speculative. It's dangerous. It's risky. It could become $50. It could become $500. It could become 50 cents. And so going into this, you have your eyes wide open. You do your research. And these were the companies I was a sucker for, folks. And the cool thing about living in San Diego is that it's just one of the centers in the world of biotechnology. So these companies are just awesome. And I would go to the annual meetings, and I would listen to them talk, and I'd talk to the employees, and I'd just get so excited. And they had credible technologies, and every single one of them did fabulously until they fell down and crashed and burned for various reasons. It's not that they weren't good companies. They were, but it's just so difficult to make it in this world. You know, you have to spend $500 or $600 million or more to get that drug through the process. And then the FDA says, no, sorry. And the stock. So, yes, you buy one Jeans or Us and then buy five Pretzels Unlimited. So now you should be able to say, I know going in that this is an incredibly risky stock, and so I'll put a little bit of money in there, but I'll expect to lose it. But with these companies, no, with the 3Ms of the world and the Honeywells of the world and the Targets of the world, I don't think I'm going to make a whole lot of money, but then I'm not going to go lose it all either, am I? Right? This is the beginning of wisdom when it comes to choosing stocks. And we hope that it's making sense to you. And if not, contact me, because, again, I can talk about this far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. So do the very last problem on the worksheet number one, worksheet number two, and in the assignment, and on the exam. Oh, but isn't this cool? Most people have no idea of these. None whatsoever. When they just, somebody on television said that that's a good stock to buy. Slide number 42. There are other models, dear students. And on your own, or maybe later in the semester, I don't know, we're a little bit behind the times. My apologies. Part of it is I injured myself. I'm not taking the muscle relaxers and the painkillers anymore, thankfully, but I've been a little bit behind the time. My apologies. So here's the residual income model and then the free cash flow model. And they're basically the same idea, you know, but they use earnings instead of dividends. So again, it allows us to value a company as not paying dividends. And the free cash flow model, we talked about depreciation. Instead of just looking at earnings, we want to find those dollars that are coming in the doors that are not leaving, but are not being counted for taxes. So we'll skip these for now. We'll come back to them later. But it's the same idea, folks. We're looking at what's going to happen in the future with the money that's coming in the door and also what they're paying us in terms of dividends. So you can do this on your own or contact me and we'll go through them. Slide number 43. Okay, Okay, Poyana. All right. So I did the calculations and I'm kind of understanding what I'm doing. Okay, it's all great. But just where are we supposed to get all this historical information anyway? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, et cetera, are going to be, let alone the expected price of stock in 3 to 5 years? Well, before the internet, this information was not readily available. You would go to the library, remember those places, or you'd ask your broker because you had a much more intimate relationship with your broker, unlike now where you don't even meet a broker, it's all online, or you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources. And traditionally, and still, the most respected source, in my humble opinion, was and still is the Value Line, slide 44. Still one of the most respected and trusted sources of data and analysis. Traditionally, it was often the only source that many investors used for data and analysis, along, of course, with the company's materials and the, you know, the financial statements, which we'll take a look at in the next presentation. It is not cheap. It is expensive, about $600 a year for the full one, but you can get the $220 a year one, which is the one we use at Southwestern's College at Southwestern's library, and that does 600 stocks. That's enough for most people, but the regular one does what? A little less than 3,000, like 2,800 or so. But again, you go to the library on the website in Canvas, there's a link to San Diego libraries, not all of them, but the main library downtown San Diego and several of the libraries. We're really lucky because the one in Point Loma, we live in OP, the one in Point Loma has it. But there are scattered around San Diego. Chula Vista's main library used to have it. I still think that they still do. And then Southwestern's library has, as I said, the 600 stocks. Not the big one, but that's enough. 600 is enough stocks to look at, folks. I'm a big fan of the Value Line, especially their timeliness and their safety indicators. One study which ignored transaction costs and tax consequences only used their timeliness indicator. It showed how you would have beaten the market handsomely over a 20-year period by just buying and then subsequently selling the stocks as they received and then lost their number one timeliness designation. In other words, Value Line was saying, hey, we think it's a good time to buy the stock. And it turns out they were right. But that's not all you're going to do, folks. Wait till you see this thing. Can you find the indicators, the price for future price projections, the historical data, the cash assets, receivable, inventory, other assets, the description and analysis of the business, the historical annual rates, the insider institutional buying and selling, the amount of debt, the number of shares, the company's financial strength, the stability, price growth, earnings predictabilities rating. Oh my goodness, this thing is a sip from the fire hose. And the interesting is they don't do it anymore. I'll tell you why. There's a bit of a backstory behind this. They used McGraw-Hill up until the sixth edition. Why? Because McGraw-Hill was the company that made your textbook. They're also the company that is Standard & Poor's. The Standard & Poor's 500, that's the same company, but not anymore. They split the company in half. And now they've gone their separate ways. The textbook is one company, and they own the they own some television stations and some newspapers and magazines and the like, media. And then the Standard & Poor's is now on its own, so they don't use that anymore. But this thing shows you, dear students, what it's done. There's this recession. That's what that means. And then this is the volume and these little squiggles here. But notice, this is the price it was in 2009, but look here. Look, I don't know if you can see it. It's kind of small, especially if you're looking on your cell phone. But it shows, hey, we think the price now is $28. We think in 3, 4, 5 years it's going to be $48 to $70. And we see what the sales per share is, the earnings cash flow per share, the earnings per share, the dividends per share, and this is what we believe they're going to be 3, 4, 5 years from now. So they do the prediction for you. And you know, sometimes they do a good job and sometimes they don't do such a good job, right? And then on the bottom of this, and then of course there's lots more in there, folks, that we'll learn as we go along, and some of it we won't go, but it's like an onion. You just keep peeling back layers and layers until you've gotten to the core. And now the bottom has their analysis. So this is required reading, dear students. Read what they believe. Oops, sorry, I did the wrong key. Read what they believe is the future for and the current thing for the stock. And remember, we looked at the last 5 years, the past 5 years, the past 10 years, and then what's going to happen in the future. What they expect, the cash flow per share, the sales per share. It's all here. And like, let's go back one. There's the timeliness. There's the one we were talking about. See, they didn't think in 2009 it was the best time for them. But safety two is pretty good because the scale of 1 to 5, and technical. We'll talk about technical. They have their own technical analysis. They don't explain it, but they don't think, you know, they say 3 is about average. So do go to the library. We have a bonus assignment where you literally just throw yourself into into one or two companies and go through the value line and do these models that we've created. And it's a bonus assignment. I hope you do it. I hope you enjoy this, because this is what will not make you guarantee that you'll be the best stock picker since more Mr. Warren Buffett or Mr. Peter Lynch, but I hope you will become them. But at the same time, will help you avoid the companies that become worthless. So let's put value line to the test. In late 2009, the price of McGraw-Hill was $28.73. The price prediction for early 2013 was around $48 to $68. And in February of 2013, the price was $44.95. Not bad, huh? Pretty darn good. When they made this prediction at the end of 2009, the stock market had rallied from the depths of the 2008-2009 crisis, but many people were still predicting the end of the world. By the way, some of them are still predicting the end of the world today, and they will continue to predict the end of the world, and you know, someday they're going to be right. Let's hope it's not too soon. Now, let's look at the prediction for the fourth edition. So the fourth edition was 2005, around $47, and they predicted it would be worth about 70 to 82 or so. And then read. How did they do in mid-2005? Well, their price prediction for 2009 was around 66 to 82, and it was hovering around $24. Well, what happened? It reached 70 bucks, folks, in mid-2007. So they were actually a little early, right? They hit their what they believed it would be, between 66 and 82. And then it started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home loan crisis. And remember, McGraw-Hill at the time owns Standard & Poor's. You've heard of them. The same people who make the Standard & Poor's 500 and the same people who were saying that these mortgage loans were AAA. What does that mean? Wait till we get to chapter 9. We talk about bonds. It means they were the golden standard. And they were based on people's lies about how much money they made. And they said, well, yeah, I can pay this mortgage. And they couldn't. It then plummeted as the home mortgage loan crisis spread to the entire financial sector in 2008-09 and triggered the Great Recession. Their mid-2007 prediction from the fifth edition was even uglier. Why? Because of the Great Recession, and this is hard to have. You know, I thought it was going to be 20% down. I really did. I was doing a bug and tussle with my buddy, who's a much more aggressive investor, and he said, "No, it's going to go down 50-60%. Homes are going to go down 50." I said, "Jim, you got to go back to the Great Depression to see real estate fall that far and stocks fall that far." Well, you know, stocks fall 50% every once in a while, but in the Great Depression, they fell 80-some percent, 87% or something like that. And he said, no, you don't understand. These people, they're making $30,000 a year, and they're getting $500,000 loans. He was absolutely right. I thought 20% down real estate stocks. I was wrong. He was right. So let's now take a look at the 2003 edition, the third edition. And they believed, and this is before they split the stock. So the price was $54.50, and they believed it's going to be somewhere between 90 and 110. Okay, so in early 2003, the Value Line predicted that the price of McGraw Hill would be around $90 to $110 in 2005 and six, because they split their stock 2-for-1. You have to divide these prices by 2 to compare them to the previous two predictions. So hooray for the Value Line. They were bang on the money. They reached the $120 level by the end of 2006. Again, split adjusted. I get a kick when some investors trash the Value Line. Look, they're human. They make mistakes just like everybody else. But I would sure love to see how their long-term results stack up against the long-term results of the Value Line. Who do you think would have better results? So I'm not trying to put these people up on a pedestal, folks. There are other companies too, but I think they're certainly one of the best, and I think they're the best. Standard & Poor's has their own analysis sheets that you can. I haven't seen them in a long time. They sent them to us at Southwestern for free. Thank you very much. But they weren't as good. Maybe they're better now. But it's just telling that instead of using their Standard & Poor's for a book that was made by McGraw-Hill, which is the same company, the authors, I'm sure, insisted, no, we're using the Value Line, okay? We're using the better one. And I don't know if that's exactly how it went down, but I think that's how it went down. Certainly, if I were the author, I would say, no, we're going to use the Value Line. They're much better. They've been around forever, and they're really, really good. So play with this. And as I said, I don't know if I told you, this is my idea of a great time. My wife is an avid reader of historical novels. So on a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, or other afternoon, if we have an afternoon, we go to the Point Loma Library, not the Ocean Beach Library, because they don't have a Value Line. But we go to the Ocean Beach Library, but I don't take my laptop because they don't have the Value Line. But we go to the Point Loma Library, and she picks out 4 or 5 historical novels, and I sit there with my laptop and just dig into the Value Line. And often what this is, again, you're going to make your own strategy and your own routine. But I'll look at the competitors. And what the Value Line does is they put them all in one place. They put all the beverage companies in one place, and they put all the energy companies in one place. So they make it easy. You just flip through the pages in that section. Because it's huge. Where do you see it? It's huge. Sometimes they use a big three-ring binder. Sometimes they use several binders. But it's a blast. It's a lot of fun. So hope you enjoy it. Okay. Slide number 55. Once we have finished all of our valuation calculations, what should we do? Should we really place much value in our predictions? And it turns out, folks, the answer is no. Rather, we should hurl them into the vast ocean along with the ashes of our dead pets and our relatives. Shred them into millions of tiny little pieces and use them as confetti at our next party. Or burn them in a huge bonfire as we dance naked under the full moon. Yeah, ignore them. We do these calculations to simply tilt the odds in our favor. Instead of placing any significance in our predictions, after we have finished, we should ignore them and ask ourselves a very simple question. Do I want to own this company? And when you read, I hope you'll read it, One Up on Wall Street with Mr. Peter Lynch, he would use, this is before the internet, he had a three-ring binder with, he would print, cut out newspaper clippings or print them out or whatever, and do his little calculations and put it all in a three-ring binder for every company that he owned. And he sometimes owned hundreds of companies He was often accused of, and he it was no company he didn't like. That he owned hundreds of companies, and so he had hundreds of these three-ring binders. And after he had done all his analysis and his research, he would hold up the binder and give himself the 90-second story. He would say, "This is Nike, and I'm buying Nike because it is the premier company now that's, you know, it's got some competitors, but it's the premier company all around the world that sells the premier whatever they are, you know, tennies, whatever you want to call them, sports shoes or whatever. And or I'm selling Nike because it's overvalued my stock, whatever." Give yourself the 60-second, 90-second pep talk about why you want to buy it or why you want to sell it, remembering always to look at the competitors. And after he had given himself that talk, he would say, "Okay, yeah, I want to own this company or I want to sell this company." And I'm Mr. Warren Buffett says, again, after you have done all the calculations, and this is the kind of calculations he does, folks. He recommends these calculations, and you find them in more detail in the book called Security Analysis that Mr. Benjamin Graham wrote with Mr. Christopher Dodd. It's much, much more complex, and you do that after you've read The Intelligent Investor. But he spends too much time on preferred stocks, which we're not interested in. But he does these same kind of calculations. But then he asks himself, would I want to own this entire company? And that's what he suggests to you, dear investor, dear student. Would I want to own FedEx if I could? If I could buy the whole company, would I want to own the company? And if the answer to that is after you've done all your analysis and your predictions and you've read all the articles you can get your hands on, read the annual report, looked at the 10-Ks and 10-Qs and all the good stuff you can find, and then, of course, the value line. Yeah, if I could own FedEx, I'd own it. Go ahead, buy 10 shares or whatever, how much you can afford. Cool, I think so. Yeah, it's worked for me. Usually, when I did it, when I bought the speculative stocks, they all went up, you know, knowing full hand. I know beforehand that these things are going to be dangerous, and they sure were. Slide 56, a final word on valuation. The problem is that it is easy to confuse the capability to make precise forecasts with the ability to make accurate ones. Any attempt to value businesses with precision will yield values that are precisely inaccurate. And this is a wonderful book. It's out of print. It's called Margin of Safety. And it's a little dated and it's hard to find. But I just love this quote. He's nailed what we're doing here, folks. We know beforehand that as we make these calculations that there is a 99.9% chance that they will not be correct. They will be inaccurate. So why do we do them, Piano? We do these calculations to help us identify companies that are prudent, long-term oriented investments. They won't make us wealthy quickly, folks, but they will make us wealthy assuming the world doesn't end. And to quote a very wise client of mine, I don't have to win big. I just have to win. Cool? Now, by now, and you've seen all these different companies, and you're going to see more as we go along, you're probably having this nagging feeling of unease of, well, I'm not exactly sure about this because look at their competitor. And you know what? That's something that we investors have to deal with. This is not science, folks. It's not math where there's a right and a wrong answer. It's not engineering where we look at the bridge that we're going to build. It's got to hold this much weight, and it's going to take this much concrete and this much steel, and to hold that much weight, and let's double it so it can do double that weight, because you know some joker is going to try to cross it with more weight than it's what it's. That's precise, and it has to be. It has to be. But we're not dealing with precision. We're dealing with uncertainty. And the world is uncertain in the investment world. But we've seen that if we make prudent, long-term oriented investments, whether we do it through our mutual funds or we do it ourselves, and the world doesn't end and capitalism keeps chugging along with all the disasters on the nightly news. We should do very well. I hope so. I mean, so far it's worked for me. And I hope that I can't guarantee anything, dear students, but I hope that it works for you. And as I've said before, I am very optimistic. I'm old. I am very optimistic about the next 30, 40 years in terms of the economy, in terms of hundreds of millions of people who are leaving poverty for the first time. And I think it bodes well for the future. If we don't blow ourselves, die in our own ways, deal with the climate, deal with the diseases, deal with the tornadoes and earthquakes and meteorites and disco and all the other disasters that befall us humans. We'll see. Okay, is this cool or what? So now, go back and do the worksheets over and over and over again. You then want to do the assignment, which is basically one of the worksheets. And then please consider going to the library one afternoon, one evening, and playing with the bonus assignment. Okay? I am so proud of you. I am so honored to be the instructor, the professor for your class. We want you to be successful. We want you to be the best investors the world has ever seen. And then when you're famous and they all want to hear what you say, what are you going to tell them? Right. Where did you learn? You got your start at Business 123, Introduction to Investment at Southwestern Community College. Okay, don't forget that part. Okay, we'll see you in our next presentation when we start financial ratio analysis and looking at financial statements. So you accountants, you're going to be our subject matter experts, okay? Because I took accounting a long time ago. See you in our next chapter.